from right to left, Representative Paul Seaton, myself, then Representative Kurt Olson, then Senator Tom Wagner, and Representative Mike Schnall. This will be the last meeting of the House Special Committee on Ways and Means this year on the issue of dealing with the unfunded liability in the PERS and TERS system. We will plan to have a report on some of the findings that the committee has made and suggested recommendations that have come forward this year, and beginning when the legislature convenes, I think on January 9th, we will start having committee meetings on this issue as well as other issues on the House Ways and Means Committee's plate. But it's my hope to have a proposal for the committee in early January to start serious deliberations on if and whether the legislature should deal with the unfunded liability through some sort of legislative measure and or appropriation, and what the options are for the committee to deal with. The purpose of this meeting today in Kenai, and I really do appreciate the hospitality of Senator Wagner, Senator or Representative Olson, and Representative Chenault, and also Representative Seaton for hosting this, and the staff of the Legislative Information Office here and the people of the Kenai Peninsula to get your views on this, some suggested input on the unfunded liability, and for you to personally hear some of the issues related to the unfunded liability from staff from the Alaska Legislature and from the Division of Investments. The purpose of these meetings is not to take testimony on nor criticize any past policy measures of the legislature related to any retirement benefit program that has been implemented this year, but rather to look forward as to what solutions we can implement as policymakers and what the implications to the state and municipalities is of the unfunded liability in the PERS and TERS system. And one of the components of the concern on the unfunded liability is the concern that communities have raised about the unfunded liability as it affects their operations. So in that spirit, one of the specific things we wanted to do at this meeting of the Ways and Means Committee is take testimony from municipalities and from municipal representatives on the effects of the unfunded liability, what communities are doing about it, what suggestions they have for dealing with the unfunded liability, how it affects their communities, and how we can partner together as policymakers at the state and local level to deal with the issue.
Chair,
we want a secure future for our children and our residents, our businesses, and our policymakers in the future, and I think a $5.7 billion unfunded liability poses some significant risks to a stable state government and sources of financing for other kinds of projects if it's not at least acknowledged and dealt with, both in the short term and the long term. So that's the general strategic context for these meetings and some of the policy issues that we've been dealing with. And is there anybody on the associated with this meeting in the legislature that has any comments or opening remarks at this point
before Chair
we
Weinrock.
Start the public testimony? We'll get to you in your handout later. Is that all right?
Yeah. Chair
okay.
Weinrock.
Well, we'll start first with former State Senator Judy Salo, and we appreciate your time in coming here. And what I've done here is, I hope an agenda was available outside. What we're going to do is take public testimony, because I've noticed that a lot of these meetings, people want to come, give their testimony, and leave. You're welcome to stay. Then we're going to hear from David Teal online and Melanie Milhorn online and Gail Schubert online. She is a representative and actually the chair of the Alaska Retirement Management Board, which is a new board constituted this year by the legislature.
Unmuted.
141. And this will be the first time that the legislative body has had to hear anyone from this new board, and it's my hope that we can work closely with this new board on policy recommendations they will have on dealing with the unfunded liability so that we can work closely with the administration on any sorts of policy measures we implement to work hand-in-hand to deal with the issue.
Chair Weinrock?
Yes?
This is Lori Rowland in Juneau, and I just wanted to let you know that Sam Trivett is here from Retired Public Employees Alaska, and he would also like to testify.
Yeah, he can testify.
Thank you.
We're then going to hear from some folks from the municipalities. I have Larry Simmons here from Kenai. Richard Alstrom is apparently upriver, and that means something to people from St. Mary more than me, but it can't get here, apparently, so he won't testify. Rick Gifford, Kodiak Island Borough, Jerome Selby is on the agenda, and Jeff Sintz from Municipality of Anchorage. Then we'll go back to public testimony. We'll have some, Representative Seaton has some handouts here that we can make available later to the LIO offices. We'll have any other comments from any other legislator, and then we'll adjourn no later than 4 o'clock. So that'll be the agenda today for everyone. And who else? Is there anyone else here who wanted to testify? Okay. Okay, good. We have a list. All right. Judy, why don't you go ahead and give your name and address for the record and give us your testimony, please. And I'd like people to keep it to 3 minutes if you can. And also, turning in written comments is always very helpful. This entire packet will be available for the public and the legislature for our use later. So even if you don't have written comments today, if you can supplement your testimony, your verbal testimony today with written comments, that's always very helpful. I'm sorry, Senator.
That's fine. Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Tarrant and members of the committee. My name is Judy Salo. I live in Kenai, and I have since 1969. I'm a former teacher, and I'm a former state president of NEA Alaska and a former member of both bodies of the legislature, albeit my term in the House was real short. I realize that the purpose of this hearing and others that you've held around the state is to deal with the budget shortfall issues relative to retirement systems. And I haven't had a chance to read all of the materials that I just picked up, but I'm appreciative of them and of you holding the hearings. And I'm sure, as you stated earlier, that you don't want to rehash the arguments for and against the passage of SB 141. And with that in mind, I'll try to keep those issues separate. But I must say first, however, that the passage of SB 141 did little to address the real problems faced by the state, by employers, and certainly by employees in the state of Alaska. To the contrary, it potentially causes new financial issues as the system will not be sustained with the contributions of new members after the effective date of July 06. So I come before you today to ask you to consider specific legislation before that effective date, and I'd like to give you a few reasons that you should do so. I think, first of all, I'm going to start out by, I will leave my written comments here, but I always add to them so they will be incomplete, but I hear the $5.7 billion amount again, and if I remember back far enough to when I took probability and statistics, I was a math major one time. One thing that I learned for sure is that you can make statistics back up any position that you have, and you can make them say pretty much what you want them to say. And I think that that was never more clear than the debate in the legislature last year. And in looking at some of the testimony that you're going to be looking at today, I think if you choose an actuary on a particular date and ask them to what your unfunded liability is, and choose a different actuary the next day, you could end up, and you have ended up, with vastly different estimates of what the issues are before you. But we all, I think, on a kind of a layman's view of this, can agree that the market was vastly different a few years ago when the temporary financial circumstances were used to really insinuate a total demise of the retirement system. But those circumstances, at least in regard to the market, have certainly changed. Mercer's change in actuarial assumptions in 2003 created a distorted picture of crisis, and thus, I think, was born the Chicken Little approach that served other political agendas, and ultimately, SB 141 was born. Hearings like this one really should have been held around the state prior to this sweeping legislation. The state of Alaska has no financial crisis today. In fact, I guess, you know, as I see it in the paper, you're worried about how are you going to spend all the money. So part of the solution certainly could be to fund the systems, making them sound, and making up for the lack of contributions that the state pulled back from years ago when we were overfunded. And then healthcare cost containment absolutely has to be a part of any solution rather than just shifting that burden totally to future retirees. I think it's kind of like amassing a huge federal deficit. It doesn't hurt now. It's easy to do now, but it undoubtedly will hurt later. The anticipated consequences, I don't think they were unanticipated, of SB 141 on Alaska education are are almost all negative, from at least certainly from my perspective. The only group likely to be advantaged, really, are those choosing to leave Alaska in mid-career. So, I would like to see this committee propose legislation that would delay the effective date of SB 141 for at least one more year, and meanwhile establish the Retirement Revision Task Force to deal with the issues that are before you today, and to deal with them in a way that is more fair, addresses long-term fiscal solvency, and especially in regard to rising health care costs. Passage of this type of legislation would give the legislature the opportunity to turn a terrible situation into an opportunity to fairly and thoroughly address the real problems of rising retirement obligations. There would be great incentive. I mean, it's not like your work would have gone for naught, even the serious political battles that you had, because there would be great incentive for all parties at the table to work to maximize the quality and the integrity of our retirement system. And the additional time to allow thoughtful input and debate would be a welcome alternative to the politics of last legislative session, which brought about this legislation. It's not often that in legislature admits error, but it has been done. In fact, errant laws have actually been repealed. And I'm not even asking you to do that. I'm asking you to take the time to do it right and to see if there's a way to solve the real issue and maintain the type of retirement system that the founders of our Constitution envisioned, which was one that would help continue to attract and keep good employees in the state of Alaska. I'll keep my testimony under the time limit, but I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Sable?
Mr. Chairman?
Hi, Representative Roachberg. I just wanted to know for the record, Representative Roachberg is online and Representative Samuels is online.
And Representative Wilson is online also.
Hi, thank you, Ms. Representative Wilson. Representative Roachberg, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Salo, did I hear your testimony correctly? In your opinion, there is no problem because we have excess funds, or what? Did I hear your testimony right? This is a little reaction to a problem that doesn't exist? Is that what your testimony was?
Not exactly, Norm. Hi.
Hi.
I think that the problem, though, being characterized as a $5.7 billion sky about to fall is exaggerated.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony.
You're welcome.
Next we have here in Kenai, Larry, we're going to wait for you. Kathy, is it Carol? Carol? Thank you, Ms. Carroll. If you could give us your name.
My name is Kathy Carroll, and I live at 392 West Vine in Soldotna. I'm employed by the Kenai Peninsula Rural School District as a teacher at Readout Elementary School in the morning, and I'm also the elected president of the approximately 600-member local teachers association, the Kenai Peninsula Education Association. I want to thank you for coming to Kenai and also for giving us this opportunity to testify.
Well, you can thank Representative Chenault and Representative Olson for that, because they're the ones that asked that I come. So.
Thanks, Bob. The first thing that I would like to hit on, I think, was articulated very well by Judy Salo, and that is the reliability of the shortfall. I think we've all seen that in the Mercer study, there were certain actuarial assumptions that are different from those that we have made in the past and have created perhaps a perception of a larger problem than actually exists. And I would like to encourage the committee or the legislature to find a means in which we can establish the true health of the retirement system and make that $5.7 billion number a little bit more accurate. And then in terms of as we go looking for how we can narrow the shortfall, of course, as a representative of employees and members of this system, I need to encourage you to look farther than just the employees' shoulders. In the past, when there have been surpluses in the retirement system, those surpluses were not afforded back to the employee. And yet, when we are looking at a potential shortfall, we're looking for the employee's shoulders to carry the burden. So I would like to encourage you to look for other methods, and in particular, the budget surplus that we have now. I definitely agree with Senator Salo that a delay of the Senate Bill 141 in order to offer an opportunity for more study would seem to be appropriate. And also, I'd like to encourage the committee and the legislature to keep in mind that part of the reason for the retirement system that we've offered in the past is so that we can attract and retain the quality of public servants that we've enjoyed in Alaska. And to please keep that in mind. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Robert Salo? Hi, Mr. Salo.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having a hearing in Kenai.
Yeah, sure.
We appreciate being able to...
Just identify yourself for the record and your
address. Robert Salo. I live in Kenai. I'm a retired teacher. I sat on the TERS board from 95 until September of 04, so almost 9 years. During that time, the funding level of the fund of the TERS, I can't speak for PERS because I was not directly involved with PERS, but in terms of the TERS figures, they ranged anywhere from 80% in the mid-90s up to 105% funding when I was still on the board. At that time, we were a little bit apprehensive of Mercer's figures in terms of their projections. And as a result of some training that some of the members on the TERS board attended, we requested an audit of the actuary. And as a result of the audit, we changed some of the assumptions with regard to health care especially, which we felt Mercer was underestimating. As a result of those assumption changes, the funding level dropped from 105% to roughly 70%, and therefore creating this crisis as we know it as today. And it's an example of figures doing various things to various people. Had we not done the actuarial audit, who knows where we'd be today. Certainly we'd be short in terms of funding level, but how accurately would anybody be able to predict it? And the ironic part is that the current bill that we're working under, the new one that you created last legislative session, uses the same actuary to project those the future program. In terms of where we're going from here, I think you have to look back to the 80s again when the legislature abandoned the tripart system that we started with, where the state put in an equal share with the employers and the employees to fund the system and placed that burden on the local school districts. When I came on the board in the mid-90s, the contribution rate for the employers, which included the state share and the district share, was only 12%, whereas the employee was putting in 8.75%. And if you need to go somewhere to find the unfunded liability, I think you need to look at the legislature itself, because there's years of underfunding on the part of the state. And people can debate that many different ways, but in reality, the employer and the state were only putting in 6% apiece through the current system we had. Beyond that, I don't think you can place the burden on the active employees that are currently in the system. They're already contributing close to 9%, and now I think that may be something that people are looking at, but I think that's an undue burden for those people. And obviously, when you hear from the cities and the employers, they're already at 30% in many cases, and I don't think you can increase that any. So I don't know where you're going to go, but hopefully the market will continue to go up, because the fluctuations we had in the past were all based on market returns. When the market did well, the system was fully funded. When the market did not do well, the system was funded at about a 70 to 80% rate.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Representative
Seat. Yeah, thank you. I'm curious. I really appreciate the fact that the board requested the actuarial audit and got those updated and got more realistic figures. I mean, everybody knew that healthcare was growing over 7.5%, but we kept it there for years.
Mr. Chairman, we can't hear Mr. Representative.
Can you hear me there?
Much better.
Okay, thanks. I'll start over for the benefit of the folks online. We were talking about the actuarial audit that had been done by the in 2002 to change the actuarial assumptions and make them reflect reality. In other words, the healthcare assumption that had been fixed at 7.5% increase and wasn't in the realm of the experience or what people anticipated as reality going forward, and also the mortality rates being kept at 1984 mortality. And since we use those longevity, the number of years of people will be retired, to calculate what the liability of the system is for payments. So I guess what I'm trying to do is find out whether you as a past member of the board feel that the assumptions to calculate the payments that are going to have to be made to retirees in the future, are you saying that those rates that when you back calculate gives us the $5.7 billion based in 2004 numbers, are you saying that those are incorrect in that you don't think that we're going to have as much payment liability to pensioners as those calculations that came out of the audit said we would?
I'm not sure exactly what your question is, but in terms of the $5.7 billion, that was done in the summer, I believe, the summer of 2004. So that actuarial audit is now more than a year old, and it might behoove you to have a fresh one again on the current assumptions to see where we actually sit in terms of where the funding level is and what the level of the assets are currently.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else have any questions? Thank you, Mr. Salo. Trina Richardson? Hi, Ms. Richardson. If you could just give us your name and address for the record.
Sure. My name is Trina Richardson. I currently reside at 303 West Katmai Avenue in Soldotna and am a 30-plus-year resident of the Kenai Peninsula. I thank you for the opportunity, as the rest of the group has, for being here today. I'm retired from the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. I've worked for 31 years for the school district here and 1 year on ADAC. And I guess I'm concerned not only about the shortfall that we're discussing right now, whether it's $5.7 billion or what the actual amount of that is currently, but also what may happen in the future in terms of shortfalls. Given the passage of the new retirement law this past legislative session, I have concerns that you're going to be able to maintain that fund for those of us who are already retired, as well as those who are vested that currently are not retired but are under that older system. So I think that that's something that you need to give some other consideration to.
One thing I want to make sure, I think there's a lot of people that are concerned. I just want to interrupt for a second. The Alaska Constitution guarantees that benefits cannot be diminished.
I understand that. Okay. Thank you for telling me that. I am aware of,
okay.
of that particular...
I wasn't telling you anything.
No, the particular piece of information. But I'm also aware that, you know, to use an old phrase, you can't get blood from a turnip. And if the state finds itself in some kind of a, you know, difficult financial crisis in the near future, the Constitution can say you have to pay us, but if the money isn't there, how does that happen? Still needs to be addressed. So thank you for that comment. So anyway, I think that all of us who have been participating in that program deserve the secure future that you yourself referred to for not only retirees, but all people in the state of Alaska as part of your job to try and make sure that that happens for us in the future. So I'd like you to be sure and take a look at that. I also think that given the comments that Mr. Sale was making in terms of the underfunding from the part of the state over a period of years, that given that there does appear that there's going to be a budget surplus here because of the high value of the oil has maintained this year, that the state should consider putting part of that money into what is their obligation to that system. And I'll limit my comments there because I think everyone else has addressed the issues that I have concerns about as well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. You can put your finger on the cross. Is there anyone that has a question for Ms. Richardson or Mrs. Richardson? Thank you for coming in. And we have John Skanarski.
That. All right. Happens all the time.
Sorry, why, Rob?
My name's John Sarnowski. I reside at 337 North Fireweed Street, Soldotna. I'm a current employee of the Kenai Peninsula Borough. Been there about 7 years. And I'd just like to give you my perceptions and ideas as a current employee. I do feel that the legislature should deal with the shortfall. I feel that when I came on, I signed a contract with the borough, with the state, for retirement and for benefits, and I feel that there's a responsibility for all ends to live up to that responsibility or that contract, especially in good economic times.
Question is, as a Kenai Peninsula Borough employee, is it the state's responsibility or the Kenai Peninsula Borough's responsibility?
I believe it's both, especially considering that that my understanding is that the system was set up so that the state was responsible for a portion of its of the system, and as was noted before, that the failure to add funds in the past has led to part of the problem, and currently I feel we can add to this fund with our higher oil revenues that we have now. I also feel that if the benefits don't exist or if they're diminished, that there's going to be little reason for someone to take a position with the state or a local community. Right now, I feel that the benefits are the sole reason, other than perhaps altruistic reasons of that you want to do something for your community, which I think a lot of people do, but the benefits are what keeps people there. So I urge you to come up with a long-term solution, I was mentioned before, and provide some assurances to both employees and employers that will have a good benefit package for their employers. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Konarski. Do you have, Mr. Konarski, do you have any questions of the witness? Anyone online? Thank you, sir, for coming in. I know we have some folks in Fairbanks and Anchorage that want to testify, and in Juneau that want to testify, and then in Barrow, it looks like there's some folks I'm not sure want to testify. I know there's some other folks off net that are here to testify. What I would like to do is take testimony from Mr. Teal, Ms. Milhorn, and Ms. Schubert from the ARM board, and she will be here, I think 15 was the word on Ms. Schubert. I think that will help a lot of people who are talking about the system. I think it'll be useful to hear what they have to say, because I think some of the things they're going to talk about address the concerns that have been testified to here, and that will help both to maybe add additional comments, public comments, and also hear what the legislature is going to be hearing probably multiple times this coming session. So it'll give you a preview of some of the issues before the committee. So I think in particular, Mr. Teal will have some interesting information, because he's going to be talking about the state's projected surplus, some areas where we're going to put the money, and respond specifically to some questions that I had put to him on dealing with the issue. So I think in terms of public testimony, I don't want to shut anybody off. We'll have plenty of time at the conclusion of this for more public testimony, but I think it'll also help you to hear what these folks have to say. So why don't we do this? Mr. Teal, are you online?
I am, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. The committee has received your handouts, and I'm not sure if they're part of the public's handouts as well. But, Mr. Teal, why don't you go ahead and run through your notes and then address the comments. I did want to mention one thing in your notes. Under point number 5, you had a certain portion of the percentages as X's, and I assumed that you had put those as placeholders to come back to and fill in the gaps later. Maybe not. Just when you come to point 5, you may want to make note of that.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, if you have the one with X's in it, that was a draft version that was replaced later, and I do have the numbers for those.
All right.
The notes were just something that...
That was for me, right.
Yeah, if the committee has them, that's fine. The public certainly should have the graphs. There should be 3 figures that you should all have.
Very good. All right, Mr. Teal, go ahead and identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony, please.
Okay, I'm David Teal. I'm Director of Legislative Finance Division for the Legislature. And you had asked me if I would recap my testimony from Fairbanks meeting, where I addressed 3 questions. What's the significance of the unfunded liability of Alaska's retirement systems? What financial resources are available to address the problem? And third, how do available resources and the unfunded liability affect fiscal planning? First, I tried to help define the problem. In Figure 1, which is a graph showing the PERS TERS unfunded liability of the $5.7 billion, I hope you all have that in front of you.
Yeah, we do.
Okay. That graph looks very similar to graphs of retirement systems from all over the country, private, public. They're very similar in that both the assets and the liabilities move in tandem on an upward trend, and then a gap appears in about 2002. And that gap is the unfunded liability, and you can see that for Alaska it's $5.7 billion. Some systems are worse off than Alaska. They tended to be ones that as Mr. Salo said, there was a time when we were actually funded at more than 100%. Some systems responded to that situation and increased benefits. Alaska didn't do that, but we were certainly hit with the factors that hit retirement systems all over the country. Those 3 factors are poor investment returns, healthcare cost increases, and new life expectancy tables. And the graph, when I saw the graph, prompted the following questions. There are six questions here. First is, why do we have a problem if we didn't do anything wrong? And at each of these Ways and Means Committee meetings, and elsewhere, I'm sure all of you have gotten questions from constituents, people have been asking how bureaucrats or the administration or the actuaries could have been surprised by the appearance of this gap. I think it's a valid question, but you indicated at this meeting and others that you're more interested in looking forward than in assessing blame. So I'm just going to point again to those three major factors that created the gap, the investment returns, health costs, and actuarial assumptions, and turn to the future. The questions aimed at the future are, what does this $5.7 billion unfunded liability mean to retirees, to employees, to state finances, to communities, to school districts? And I think very importantly, to retirees, it doesn't mean much. Their benefits, as you noted, can't be reduced legally. There is money in the system, and I think Melanie Milhorn can address this better than I can, how long we can pay benefits with no infusion of money or no rate changes. But it's years into the future. The fact that retirees aren't affected is obviously not clear to retirees because they've appeared before the committee with pleas to leave their benefits alone. I don't see that as an issue at all. I think retirees are 100% certain of getting their benefits. For employees, the current employees, there is no contribution rate increase in any of the discussions here, and I don't think that the rate can be increased again without some legal action. Employers are responsible for filling the entire gap, and while I guess you could say that employees then appear to be unaffected, certainly I would say there's likely to be an indirect impact in that it's pretty tough to negotiate higher take-home pay when your total compensation is under so much pressure. And the benefits certainly are compensation an employer is going to view it as a total compensation package, not just as take-home pay. To employers, they're the ones that are going to be hit with the higher contribution rate in the absence of massive cash infusions. Rates are going to go up 5 points annually until they reach roughly 50% of salary for TERS and 30% of salary for PERS. And this is the impact that's of most significant to employers and to the state. Third, you'll see that gap appeared very quickly. So it prompts the question, can it vanish just as quickly, and what's the likelihood that it will vanish quickly, or do we have to do anything at all to close that gap? And here you get into opinion, but I think you should expect that gap to grow before it begins to shrink. Our assets are less now than they were in the past, so that even under better market conditions, returns on the investments are unlikely to close that gap by a significant amount. And then it's important to understand that the rates that are set, the employer contribution rates, are designed to close the gap over a period of 25 years with no cash infusion. So question number four then is, well, if rate increases are going to solve the problem, are we looking for a solution when none needs to be found? Some thought the legislature had to come up with $5.7 billion this session, and that's definitely not true. There's certainly no crisis in that sense. But the increases will apply significant financial pressure to communities and to school districts and to state agencies. Now, the primary reason to be concerned about solutions other than just letting the rate increase handle the problem is that those rate increases, as I said, are going to be 30 to 50% of salary. And that rate may be unaffordable or unacceptable to employers. There's also been some confusion over who owes how much. What's the $5.7 billion gap? And figure 2 has some information on that. It shows the shares of system liability, and you can split this a number of ways. PERS-TERS split is about 60-40, respectively. But maybe more relevant is who's going to pay the bill. These meetings, to me, have demonstrated a pretty high degree of interest at the local government level. But this committee is comprised of legislators, and that means that there are several perspectives that are probably going to be weighed here. If your focus is the state itself, then rate increases might be an acceptable solution to the problem. Don't do anything at all. Let the rate increase handle it. The state share of the unfunded liability is about $2 billion, or 35%. And adding the university to that brings the state total to about $2.2 billion, or 39%. And money for personnel costs comes from various fund sources, about half of which is general funds. So we have an option here, and that's to, I guess the question is, why would we want to fix a problem by filling the gap with general funds when it would cost an extra $1 billion? Now, when I mentioned this in Fairbanks, I think there was some confusion over exactly how this works, so let me explain a little there. As I said, the state gap, the state responsibility, or the state portion of the gap, is about $2 billion. Now, we could fill that gap with $2 billion of general funds if we had the money, and the rates would stabilize now. And the cost is obviously $2 billion of general funds. If we simply let the rates go up instead, we're still going to pay that $2 billion. Or maybe some more, because the earnings will be lower if we don't pay in advance. But it won't be paid with pure general funds. Nearly half the cost of state employees is federal and other funds. And since benefits are paid in the same proportion as salaries are, if we simply let the rates go up, about half of the cost of the unfunded liability will be paid with federal and other funds. School districts, about $2.3 billion for the TERS portion, that's 41%, and another $400 million for PERS, and that's about a total of $2.7 billion, or 48%. It looks to me like the state will be filling that gap with general funds now or later, because the state pays for most of the cost of K-12 education. In this case, it may make sense to contribute the cash now to avoid the higher costs in the future. And I think communities are the ones that are in the most controversial position, because the state arguably is not responsible for the operating costs of communities, at least not in the same direct manner as school districts are, as we are for school district funding. And their share of the gap is about $700 million, or 12%. But my experience on this one is that if it's a local problem that affects enough communities, it's going to be a state problem. And it's unofficial, but the governor's budget does include $38 million for the retirement cost increases for local communities. So certainly the legislature is going to be debating that issue this session. The last question here is, can the state afford to contribute enough cash to make a difference? And that's where we start a discussion of the second question you asked me to address, and that's the state resources available to address the unfunded liability problem. And that's where you can turn to Figure 3, which shows some projections of surplus revenue. That figure shows that we face some limitations on actions because we don't have $5.7 billion. I'm just going to run through this really quickly, but you can see that operating capital and other parts of that budget, including some costs that we may see as 07 increments. But if you just skip to the bottom line, you'll see the amount of money that's available if the legislature were to decide to spend some of the money, the surplus, in closing some portion of the and address some portion of that unfunded liability. For FY05, there's no surplus available on line 31 or line 40, either one you choose to look at. But line 40 may be better since it shows a surplus after supplementals. I don't think we need to get into the complications of using 05 money for 06, so we can just skip ahead to 06. That year began with no surplus projected, but oil is much higher now than projected, and the latest figures, they're unofficial, show a projected surplus of about $1.2 billion on line 31. That's likely to decline as the legislature makes supplemental appropriations. And there's a list there of some supplementals, but basically you're looking at bringing that surplus down to about $1.1 billion, as shown on line 40. For FY07, you've got another small projected surplus, $235 million. And again, that's before supplementals, and subtracting supplementals is likely to give us a total supplemental there of about $1.2 billion on line 40. And that's $1.1 billion from 06 and another $160 million in 07. For 08 and beyond, expenditures are likely to increase for PERS, TERS, and state contracts and other issues. And deficits will resurface if oil revenue falls. So bottom line here is we have a one-time surplus of about $1.2 billion. Now, clearly, that could turn out to be a lot better than predicted, and it will be better if oil stays high. But right now, we can't spend money that we don't have. So you're looking at $1.2 billion on the table, and if oil stays high, more money will be available, but the legislature can't really spend that money until 08 or beyond when the revenue stream is more certain. So for now, we should all be looking at this as a one-time opportunity. Another part of the bottom line is that the $1.2 billion is insufficient to fill the entire $5.7 billion gap. But that using the surplus to reduce the unfunded liability would reduce future costs, effectively rolling that surplus forward to a time when surpluses are not anticipated. In effect, spending surplus revenue to fill the gap is savings. And that really brings us to the final issue here in fiscal planning. You know three things. The legislature won't be forced to come up with the entire $5.7 billion required to fill the gap. You know that $1.2 billion is available to address the problem. And you also know that there will be competing needs and desires for that surplus. But there really aren't that many options. You can spend it now or you can save it. I don't know that spending it is worth a long discussion. It doesn't really matter how you spend it, whether it's capital or operating or anything else. Once you spend it, the money's gone. And savings offers a lot more options or more options more worthy of discussion. And in order of how easy it is to get at your savings, your options include depositing money to the permanent fund. That is untouchable. Or you could let it fall into the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. That's the way the system was designed to work. And that just means that if you don't spend the money somehow, the Constitutional Budget Reserve will get all the surplus money, and then a supermajority vote, three-quarter vote, would be required to get it back out. Another option is to pay some of the retirement system's unfunded liability. And as I noted earlier, that just rolls the money forward to the distant future. Last option is to capitalize the public education fund, and that just rolls the surplus forward 1 year. Now, one thing to keep in mind on the connection between saving, spending, and fiscal planning is that other than letting the money fall to the Constitutional Budget Reserve, both spending and saving require an appropriation so that both of them look like spending. It's really hard to set a target for an appropriation limit when in order to save the money, if that's what the legislature chooses to do, that requires an appropriation. And when we report spending by the state, every appropriation, whether it's really savings or spending, is going to look the same. It looks like it's money spent. It shows as an appropriation. So that just complicates fiscal planning because it's hard to set targets.
That's just a political problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're looking for recommendations, I would put the 06 surplus in the public education fund to fund FY07 K-12 education. That doesn't save any money and it doesn't cost any money. It just takes the surplus off the table in 06 and spends it in 07, reduces our 07 budget, and moves the decisions to the full FY07 budget process. Now, as part of that process, the legislature could pay up to $1.2 billion towards this unfunded liability. Now, if you choose to fund any of the unfunded liability, I would recommend that you put it all towards the TERS system rather than PERS. The impacts of doing that include that the TERS rate would stabilize after FY08 at about 30% of salary, and that would avoid massive annual increases to the education formula. The rates for state employees would increase to about 30% of salary, but non-general funds would pay for half of that increase. And for local government increases, they're going to have to be addressed through municipal assistance or revenue sharing program of some sort, again, if you choose to address the problem at all. So I'd just like to close by saying that fiscal planning has proved to be very tricky in the past, and my recommendation is based on the availability of surplus revenue. For all I know, there are going to be many competing uses for that surplus and many ideas about future spending and revenues, so I may be jumping the gun by referring to a surplus. With regard to the longer-term fiscal planning, I view that as simply balancing the budget. And in recommending that you fill a portion of the unfunded liability, my point really is that balancing future budgets is going to be a whole lot easier if costs can be moved from the deficit years in the future to the surplus years, which are now. Because by filling the unfunded liability, we reduce the rates that we have to pay in the future. And as we've seen for teachers, that's $40 million a year and about $25 million a year in general funds for state employees and another $19 or $20 million a year for local governments. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to address them.
Thank you, Mr. Teal. Representative Seaton.
Yes. David, the question about putting the money in the education fund for 07, what's the interest that we're earning on money in that fund now compared to the 8.25% that PERS fund is projected to yield?
Oh, it would just be invested with general funds, and I don't know what that is. Gary Bader actually called me and asked me if I needed any information on returns, and I didn't have time to get back to him, but Melanie may know some of those return figures.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else online have a question? Representative Roford?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Teal, I'm trying to reconcile the your latest spreadsheet here, which I really appreciate, 12105 with the one one from October 11th.
Can't hear you, Norm.
He's talking about figure 3.
Yeah, I'm looking at figure 3 plus the comparison we had last month plus the one that was done for the 9905 PERS Task Force meeting or this Ways and Means Committee hearing. You and I have had some discussions, and I'd like to refer to your figure 3 just as a point of clarification. you're showing a $1.25 billion surplus in 06. But that, so you're, then you're showing the public education funding expenditure of $414 million in the 07. So to get a